till all the jails are empty and all the bellies filled, till no one hurts or steals or lies and no more blood is spilled. God has work for us to do. God has work for us to do till God's will is done and all things are made new. God has work for us to do till age and race and gender no longer separate, till pulpit, press, and politics are free of greed and hate. God has work for us to do. God has work for us to do till God's will is done and all things are made new. Work for us, work for us, work for us to do.
Isn't this the fast I choose? Releasing wicked restraints, untying the ropes of a yoke, setting free the mistreated, and breaking every yoke? Isn't it sharing your bread with the hungry and bringing the homeless poor into your house, covering the naked when you see them, and not hiding them from your own family? Then your light will break out like the dawn, and you will be healed quickly. Your righteousness will walk before you, and the Lord's glory will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and God will say, "I am here." If you remove the yoke from among you, the finger pointing, the wicked speech, if you open your heart to the hungry and provide abundantly for those who are afflicted, your light will shine in the darkness, and your gloom will be like the noon. The Lord will guide you continually and provide for you, even in parched places. He will rescue your bones. You will be like a watered garden, like a spring of water that won't run dry. They will rebuild ancient ruins on your account. The foundations of generations past you will restore. You will be called the mender of broken walls, restorer of livable streets.
By praying through our doing and singing though we fear, by trusting that the seeds we sow will bring God's harvest near. God has work for us to do. God has work for us to do till God's will is done and all things are made new. God has work for us. Work for us to do.
Righteousness. God of righteousness, may I fully embrace the truth that your holy word names as evil all forms of injustice and oppression. May I have the courage to confront the injustices I witness. May I be willing to open my mind and broaden my understanding of discriminatory practices and positions of which I was once ignorant. May I not stand idly by when another culture, language, or race is used as a punchline of an ill-fated joke. May I speak out against domestic policies and practices that continue the oppressive privilege of the powerful over against the less powerful. May I live my life by believing the common good is served when all have enough, and that in your economy, there is always enough for everyone. But righteous God, before I endeavor to do any of these things, may I find the courage to confront the evil and injustice that resides within me. Amen.
Let's sing that chorus one more time to do.
God has work for us to do. God has work for us to do. Till God's will is done and all things are made new. God has work for us to do.
I like sitting back here. It's a lot more comfortable. You see, I'm a bit introverted. I know that surprises most of you, but talking in front of people takes a lot of energy. I like sitting back here in my own little isolated world. I can worship in my own way, encounter God as I need. If I don't stand up or sing, you can't see me to judge me. Yeah. I like sitting back here doing my own thing. However, truth is, God doesn't call any of us to sit on the back row of life. God has work for us to do in the world. And sitting on the back row, hiding our gifts in our heart, keeping our hands in our lap and our feet standing still, it serves no one. It does nothing to break down the disparity in the world and walls in the love of God that beats in our human hearts. And let's face it, if we come to worship in this place, and if we are lucky enough to be part of such a wonderful group of church family, is there one of us in this room who can say we have not felt the love of God beating in our heart? Moving in our singing and folding in the mystery of the bread we eat? How can we hold back the love we feel by the healing hugs that we get from each other? God has work for us to do, church. Lots of work to do. This love we get to feel, this wonderful community where hope has floated up for most of us, it's not meant to be on the back row. In reality, I bet most of us in this room believe this. Love overcomes hate. Good outweighs bad. Hope floats up. Grace heals. And God is at the heartbeat of it all. Gathered up here in this space in our human bodies and stored as fuel to save the world. A little bit at a time. Because big as the task is, we, each one of us, are called to be a bearer of the mystery of love in the world, to be a justice maker in our daily lives, for we are the hands and the feet of Christ in the world. We, all of us. We are the song that needs singing, the bread that needs to be fed. We're the hug that needs to be giving, the repair of the heart that needs healing. Whew. Oh my gosh, isn't that a big task? And I can't do it comfortable as I am, sitting back there in that little corner where I sit on Sundays all by myself. It doesn't serve the world well. It doesn't serve humankind well and doesn't allow God's love to move out from here into the world. Church, we all got work to do. This story I'm about to share with you is done with permission from the other person involved. So understand I'm not breaking their confidences. I was immediately impressed with her on the phone when I called her for that first interview. She was excited from western part of the state where I grew up, and I was immediately connected to her. I could tell she cared for patients, and she was hardworking, and I knew I was to work with her. I interviewed her in person and then shortly after hired her. I could see she held some untapped potential. And that's what I love about getting to supervise young people, seeing that potential break open and bloom. She started with me on the first day, and typically that's where I began to build the relationship. Since one of my sites involves a mental health facility, it involves a lot of red tape. And clearance to work there involves driving around to different government locations. So I took her on that first day to get fingerprinted and get her background checks done. Now, one of the places is not in the best neighborhood. The room is filled there with people from various skin colors, from light to dark, and most of the people that I see there are really poor. Typically, there's a long wait time, and so my employee and I sit and wait, and it gives us time to talk. I kind of like sitting in those government places. For a preacher, places like government waiting rooms are a great place to think of the state of the world and to see a lot of theology in action. As we were leaving and got in the car, my new employee on her first day of work made a racial slur and alluded to the fact that she would like to have a gun with her in that location. And my mind stopped. And all I could think was, I can't believe she just said that. How could she say this in front of her new supervisor? Who have I hired? And I was silent. Silent to racism and discrimination and hate. And I just sat there and drove and sat in my silence. Church, I got some work to do. Racism is real. It's unjust. We have all got some work to do. Amen. You know, as I drive to church and around town during the week, it seems on every corner and with a stoplight, there's a sign and somebody standing say, help, I need food. God bless, anything will help. I'm always torn about what to do. And I'm always wondering what their story of brokenness might be that led them to stand on a corner begging, which often calls me to the not so fun part, my own response to the need. Sometimes on Sunday on the ride home, we've handed off a bowl of nosh to them as we drive by. Every once in a while on rarer occasion than I'd like to admit to you all, I've bought a hamburger or sub and just handed it out my window. I once heard Anthony talk about his mama, and he said mama couldn't stand for people to be hungry. I'm kind of like that too. I learned it from my own mama, whose first words when anyone walks in the house is, let me get you something to eat. That's her way of loving us. I guess I have just a tiny bit of it in me. I drive down the streets and I see the homeless and I wonder, how do my brothers and sisters find themselves here? How can I help? If I'm honest, sometimes it really irritates me. And sometimes I don't even see them. More often than not, I don't see them. I'm ashamed to say that too. Because it seems so hard to think about making a dent in all those hungry bellies and broken hearts. So often I just drive on by and sit in my silence wondering what to do. Not feeling so good about holding all that God love in my heart.
Nearly 30 years ago, I moved from my home here in Kentucky and went to Bristol, Pennsylvania to live with the love of my life. And that's worked out pretty well. But I didn't feel satisfied because I didn't have a church there. So my Sherry took me to the Catholic church, and, you know, that didn't work out real well. So I was searching for something to do, and it finally came to my little brain that there were folks who might not have enough to eat. So on Friday nights, I made a turkey. On Saturday, me and Sherry made lots and lots of sandwiches. We put them in little brown bags with an apple and a napkin. And we took them to Center City, Philadelphia. And we drove up in front of the art museum. And I just got out and opened the back of the car and started handing out my little brown bags. And that first day, there was only about 25 people. I've learned throughout the years, through the homeless community, there's quite a bit of communication, which is interesting because 30 years ago, they didn't all have cell phones. But anyways, we did that for a long, long time, and that became our church. I believe we still have lots of work to do. It was one of the best God experiences that I've ever had.
Church, we got a little work to do. People are hungry in our world, physically hungry and spiritually hungry. When God's love beats in our human heart, our call is not to drive by in silence and home to our refrigerator. And I do that a lot. And I'm not sure what my answer to all this is, but I know that driving on by and ignoring it doesn't make me feel very good. Church, we have the mystery of God beating in our heart, and we're called to bear the mystery and make justice happen. Church, we got some work to do. Several years ago, when I was starting my CPE, I went on a tour of the Fayette County Jail with the chaplain. I was hoping the Presbyterian Committee would approve this as a place to do my off-site ministry. As I toured that facility, I saw faces. Faces of people who had experienced a hard life. Faces of hurt. Faces of rejection. The American criminal justice system holds more than 2.3 million people, 2.3 million people in local, state, and federal jail. And they're filled with folks who've done something, made horrible mistakes, got caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people, and along their way and detoured into destruction and hopelessness. Most of the folks I saw were caught on the worst day of the worst decision of their life, and now they're locked away. Value for society lost and potential. All that untapped potential held back by bars. And I don't know how to change all that or make it better, but sitting back and doing nothing doesn't seem quite right.
This past week, Pam asked me to reflect on a relationship I've had with a man who was on death row in Louisiana. This relationship, this friendship, began 11 years ago when I began writing to him in an effort to provide friendship to someone who's in prison. Since then, this relationship has blossomed into one of the best and most consistent relationships in my life. Having visited him on a number of occasions and now talking to him on the phone once or twice a week, I've been blessed with a truly good friend. A friend who is there for me, and a friend who didn't miss an opportunity to call me yesterday to remind me that his NCAA bracket was better than mine because North Carolina beat Kentucky. Besides gaining a great friend, I've grown a lot through this relationship because it's moved me closer to creating justice. I believe the only way to create justice is to physically be with the poor. And I believe that loneliness is the greatest poverty. So I see those who are marginalized or estranged as being part of the poor. And through this friendship, you can fulfill a major human need for connection. I also think that the imprisoned are systematically forgotten, so much so that it seems that many people forget that we gather each week underneath a cross, which is nothing more than a historical method of execution. If the story of Christ were to be updated for contemporary times, we would be gathering under the image of a gas chamber or an electric chair. With Good Friday approaching, my hope is that we can have a deeper understanding of the cross that calls us to move closer to those on the margins and those behind bars. And with the renewing spirit of Easter, I hold close the words of Sister Helen Prejean, who reminds us that we are all worth more than our worst mistake.
Amen. church. Our brothers and sisters who made mistakes still deserve our value, still deserve relationships, still deserve to feel the love of God beating from our hearts. Church, we got some work to do. Back to my own little story. I sat back in silence for several weeks and tiptoed around that employee, not knowing quite what to do. All the while, I thought of my little family, Mike Randolph and Daniel Beasley, and my dear little wise woman, Miss Hattie and Miss Elnora. And I've thought a lot about the implicit and explicit nature of racism and how silence alone doesn't overcome it. My heart hurt because of my silence. And finally, one day, I went to that employee and called her into my office. I was shaking a bit inside, because truth is, I really like people to like me, and I knew that what I was about to say, well, I was pretty sure she wasn't going to like me after our meeting. She sat down across from me, and I pulled up knee to knee with her and looked her in the eye. And I asked her how life was and how work was going and how her training was going. To all which she responded positively, and then I said, well, I've got something else to say to you, and it's very difficult for me to say it to you, but I have to say it. And then from inside, God's love rose up inside of me, and my silence was overcome, and I said, I grew up in the home you probably lived in. And I have fought my whole life to overcome the prejudice and racism that was given to me living in a little southern town of white people. And then I looked her in the eye and I said, do you remember what you said to me in the car on your first day of work? And she said, yes, ma'am, I do. I then thought of those that I love so deeply. And from inside of me, a voice rose up, and I'm not sure where it came from, but it silenced my silence to racism. I said to that young woman, I said, I care how you feel about people who are different than you, and it matters to me how you feel in your heart, but I can't change that piece of you. Only you can break the change that you were given. But hear me when I say this to you. If you ever, ever say something of that nature again, if I ever see you treat another human differently because of the color of their skin, I promise you I will fire you on the spot. No words to be discussed. And I will handle the fallout from HR after it's over. Good girl. Do you understand? And I smiled. And she said, yes, ma'am, I do. After her training, I did something on purpose. I placed this young woman in an area where her colleague was another young woman about her age, whose skin color was black. Because I don't believe we can live and work together and not be changed. And that's what's happening. Little by little, she is changing in her relationships. Little by little, every day, she is laughing with her black friend and going out to dinner after work and breaking bread and learning a new way. Just little by little. Church, I got work to do. We all got work to do. People are hungry. People are hurting. People are in prison. People need relationship. People need to be called out. We have barriers to break down and bridges of love to build, hands to touch, and hearts to heal. We carry within us this amazing, amazing love that we don't understand. God love. It beats inside. We fuel it here in this community. And it is our call to discipleship. And that will make the world a better place to be. Nope. Sitting on the back row, even though it's really comfortable. And silence, it keeps us safe. You know, we won't get hurt if we don't say anything. Being vulnerable, feeding people we don't know, building friendships with people on death row or in a nursing home or on the street corner, it calls us to risk. Church, we got work to do. Sit on the back row no longer. Let God's light shine. Go forth from this moment and allow the love in our heart to flow up. Let it bear to the world. Let it be present. Come on, y'all. We got work to do. For we are the hands and feet of God in the world. And we, all of us, back row sitters and front stage talkers, we are called to bear the mystery of our God to the world. And in doing so, in doing that, that is how we make justice flow. Church, we got work to do. Church, come on, you guys can say it. We got work to do. Church,
we got work to do.
So let's just say, here I am, Lord, and get busy. May it be so for all of us. Amen. Amen.